conversations. There's just so much to talk about. You know, it's funny because people were saying, oh, are you going to be able to talk about anything after Trump? And it's like, yeah, man, the world keeps turning, man. There's so much going on, you know, and Jamal said it, you know, COVID-19, it's affecting the entire world. And so I'm just very glad to have some competent people in the executive branch finally. Some people say, oh, it's a return to the normalcy of bureaucracy. But you know what? Sometimes that's what the federal government needs. The federal government needs people who understand how to run a government, not a business. That's just my own two cents, my own personal opinion.
Real quick, yeah. We've been the world hegemony for I don't know how long with the same system of government. So. Yeah. Not a bad place to be.
Something's got to be working, right? You know, not everything's perfect. We understand. We have what I say, institutional racism and other things like that. But we're going to go to this NPR break. I'm going to go ahead and get Dr. Green on the phone so we can have a fantastic conversation about the COVID-19 vaccine. You've been listening to The Urban Cafe.
Live from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain is pledging to ramp up COVID-19 vaccine distribution.
The process of getting that vaccine into arms, that's the hard process. That's where we're behind as a country, and that's where we're focused in the Biden administration on getting that ramped up.
Speaking this morning on NBC's Meet the Press, Klain said the administration is not necessarily starting from scratch, but that the Trump White House did not have a distribution plan, especially outside of nursing homes and hospitals. A top White House economic advisor is set to speak with a bipartisan group of senators today. National Economic Council Director Brian Deese is to speak privately with 16 mostly centrist senators as the Biden administration seeks to build support for its $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package. Health officials in New Zealand investigating what is believed to be the country's first coronavirus case outside of a quarantine facility since November. They say a 56-year-old woman tested positive several days after leaving a two-week mandatory quarantine upon returning from Europe. They say she had tested negative twice before being allowed to return home. The newly confirmed Pentagon chief says he's concerned about extremists in the military. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports that's in response to the many veterans involved in the attack on the Capitol.
Retired General Lloyd Austin is the country's first black Secretary of Defense. At his confirmation hearing this week, he told senators that he's aware of the persistent problem of white supremacists and militia groups enlisting in the military, which he saw himself during 40 years in the Army.
The job of the Department of Defense is to keep America safe from our enemies. But we can't do that if some of those enemies lie within our own ranks.
An NPR investigation found that of the people charged so far in the January 6th attack on Congress, about 1 in 5 had served in the military. Many of the police who defended the Capitol are also veterans, including Officer Brian Sicknick, who died after being assaulted by the mob. Quill Lawrence, NPR News.
To Washington State now, where a police officer near Seattle is under investigation after ramming his car through a large crowd Saturday and appearing to drive over one person. Casey Martin is with member station KUOW.
Tacoma police say an officer was responding to a large crowd downtown with people doing burnouts with their cars.
There was a backup of traffic that was honking and kind of getting riled up or out of their cars taking video.
Mark Mathura was coming from dinner when he smelled the burning rubber. He recorded video of when the police car arrived and then is quickly surrounded by the crowd. It backs up at first and then speeds through, knocking many people down and driving over at least one person.
People were kind of running and screaming in panic. Everyone was on their phones.
A police spokesperson says the officer feared for his safety and called for medical aid after leaving the scene. An independent investigation is now underway. For NPR News, I'm Casey Martin.
This is NPR News. Chinese state television is showing video today of the rescue of 11 gold miners who have been trapped underground for the past 2 weeks following an explosion. They were hauled up one by one over the course of several hours. 10 others remain unaccounted for. The cause of the accident is under investigation. A suicide attack on government-backed forces in Iraq has killed at least 11 Iraqi troops. There's been no claim of responsibility. But NPR's Alice Fordham reports the attack has the hallmarks of the Islamic State.
The attack was near the city of Tikrit, north of the capital Baghdad. It came late Saturday and included suicide bombers. Among those killed was a commander of the Popular Mobilization Forces, a group of militias formed to fight ISIS and now nominally under government control. The attack comes as Iraq is still dealing with the aftermath of an ISIS suicide bombing in Baghdad last week, which killed more than 30 civilians in a busy market. ISIS has been greatly weakened in Iraq, but its fighters and associated militant groups are still able to stage attacks intermittently, especially in the provinces. In the US, Biden administration officials say they support keeping US troops in Iraq to help fight ISIS. Alice Fordham, NPR News, Baghdad.
The teams that will play in the Super Bowl are being decided today. Green Bay is playing Tampa Bay for the NFC Championship. The AFC title game pits the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs against the Buffalo Bills. The Chiefs quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, is expected to play after sustaining a concussion last week. I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Joyce Foundation, committed to advancing racial equity and economic mobility for the next generation in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. And the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Welcome back.
Oh, yeah, man, how you doing?
You good?
I know you like that.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Urban Cafe. This is Jamal. Have a great show this Sunday. Kicked it off talking a little bit about the Buccaneers, their game today in Lambeau Field, Green Bay, Wisconsin. Then we're talking about COVID-19, any questions with the vaccine distribution, how can we get things going? And we got a few more callers we're going to jump to right now. So caller, please state your name and go ahead and tell us what's on your mind.
Good morning, gentlemen. This is Chris Steiner, Clearwater.
Good morning, Chris.
Hey, I really do a lot of research because health is primary, personal health, ecological, and economic health. And I believe in empowering people. I dedicate a lot of time to research. So because I don't think that the fascist government is pro-health as much as they would pretend. So I can understand why you might think that it's a conspiracy theory, what you've heard, that the vaccines don't prevent you.
Hello?
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 Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. We can hear you. I'm not sure what happened there. So sorry about that. Was that Chris or who was that?
Yeah, that was Mr. Chris Steiner. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, Chris. So we actually have our invitee, our guest today, Dr. Green. Dr. John Green, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Good morning, Dr. Green. Great to have you on the show on the Urban Cafe. For full disclosure, I am actually a member of the Moffitt Cancer Center team. I work in IT, and Dr. Green has graciously accepted my invitation to be a guest on the Urban Cafe. Dr. Green is the section chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases and Tropical Medicine and senior member of the Internal Medicine Department at Moffitt Cancer Center. I think most of our listeners probably know, but Moffitt Cancer Center is the only NCI comprehensive cancer center in the state of Florida, and just an amazing organization. And we are so pleased to have you on the phone, Dr. Green. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Green, COVID-19, obviously an infectious disease, and so, you know, that's a hot topic across all of the United States and the world, really, at this point. And so what can you tell us about the COVID-19 vaccines that have been approved so far?
So both of the vaccines are a type of vaccine where it gets into your body through the injection into the muscle, and from there it stimulates the immune system to make 20 different types of antibodies that will get rid of the COVID-19 virus should it try to get into your body. And even though some of the mutations are changing the virus's structure, such as from United Kingdom, South Africa, and other places, it only changes about 4 different parts of that antibody production where it could be resistant or not effective, but the other 16 continue to kill the virus. So even though we're seeing these mutations, the vaccine is still so far able to work against old viruses that have been around the whole time versus the new mutations. And eventually the virus will make a mutation that the affects all 20 of those antibody types so that it won't necessarily work anymore, and they'll have to come up with a new virus. Okay. Some people say that's going to occur in a matter of months. Others say it will occur in a matter of years. But as of right now, the vaccine does cover all the different strains, and they just came out with a study from Israel, and they found that those that were vaccinated compared to those who were not vaccinated, there has been a dramatic reduction in the people who are vaccinated getting the virus, which is telling us in real life it actually is working.
That's fantastic news. And so, Dr. Green, my co-host Jamal has a question here.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Green.
Hi.
Yeah, this is Jamal. Yeah, I had a question. Because I've heard about these mutations before. If you could kind of explain that, because that's kind of a scary thought of that process, because, like, what's to stop these mutations?
Right. So we have known for decades that the flu virus, as an example, makes genetic mutations every year, and those are called genetic drift. And drift is a very slight mutation, so that over time, it could take 10 years before the virus is unable to be covered by our vaccine, and we have to make a different kind of vaccine. But every 10 years, there's something called a genetic shift, which is a massive change in a large part of the virus's genes, so that the shift is so dramatic that the vaccine that we give people will not cover that new strain because the changes have been so great. We already know this occurs with the flu. You remember we had the H1N1 outbreak, which was not covered well from the flu vaccine about 5 years ago or more. And that was a major change in the genetic makeup, whereas year to year it was pretty effective. And then when we did cover the flu virus with the vaccine to prevent it, it was at best 60% protection, whereas these COVID-19 vaccines are 95% protection, which is an amazing percentage of protection. Now, granted, we don't know how fast this thing's going to mutate. Will it mutate faster or slower than the flu virus? So it's just a fact of viruses. They tend to mutate all the time because they're making billions and billions and billions of copies. And every now and then, a strain that is more infectious and potentially more deadly can emerge. But a lot of the mutations wind up creating viruses that are not very contagious and are not very dangerous. And those don't seem to catch on, and they eventually die out. We never even know about them. So this is the nature of viruses and genetic transfer each time they reproduce themselves.
So question, Dr. Green, this is again Joshua. So for our listeners out there, the news has been covering this UK variant. So is the UK variant considered a drift?
I would say, using the same parlance, it would be considered a drift because we, for example, have these new drugs called monoclonal antibodies that the government bought up and now gave to us to use to prevent infection. And the new strain, because that monoclonal antibody is directed against one little section of the spike protein instead of the vaccine directed against 20 sections, the new strain will render that monoclonal antibody ineffective because of that one little change. However, the vaccine, which gives you 20 different targets of that spike protein, you would have to have a major shift in the genetic makeup, which has not happened yet, although articles and experts are now starting to say maybe it is going to become real quickly, ineffective to the vaccine, and it won't work. We'll have to use a new one. Others are saying, no, it can't. It won't happen for a year or two. So right now, it's all conjecture. Nobody knows.
All right. Thank you, Dr.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Yes. And, doctor, are these vaccines safe, and do they change our DNA?
No, because these are very safe because the messenger RNA, it only enters the part of the cell called the cytoplasm, and the DNA of your cells are in the nucleus. So the messenger RNA only gets into the cytoplasm, and then it makes a little structure in your cytoplasm called the ribosomes make antibody, and therefore it's an impossibility to get into your DNA and then all of a sudden alter your chromosomes and make you have mutations to cause cancer or whatever. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is a adenovirus, which is a DNA virus, which could potentially get into your DNA nucleus, but there's no evidence that that ever happens. And when we use those kind of vaccines for patients with melanoma cancer and HIV virus infection, there's no evidence that these vaccines are incorporating into your DNA and then can make some wild mutation that could cause disaster or danger to yourself. So for sure, not the messenger RNA. And then the Johnson & Johnson adenovirus is considered benign, even if it does get into the nucleus. So that's pretty much the nature of these vaccines.
Wow, that's incredible. And so from talking here, I think that's a good segue into talking about, you know, the mRNA vaccines. You know, what is that difference between the mRNA vaccines, which is the Pfizer, Moderna vaccine, to vaccines prior to COVID-19, right? So like the normal flu vaccines, like you mentioned earlier. So what's the principal difference there?
Yeah, so these messenger RNA vaccines have the ability to take a piece of a virus called the spike, the part that sticks out and attaches to your cell, and then they make just that little small section because they know already by mapping the whole virus's genome what that section comes from. So now your body makes antibody against that spike protein, and some of the cells have a memory to recognize it that can last 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years to produce antibody if it ever encounters it again. And the messenger RNA is unique because it can do a specific thing to make a spike protein, whereas when you get a lot of the attenuated flu vaccines, what happens is they take a flu virus, the whole genome, the whole virus, they do things to it in passages in the lab to attenuate it, which means it makes it ineffective to spread through your body and cause disease. And so it's like taking a dead virus, but its genome is intact. They put it in your body. Your body recognizes it as foreign and then makes antibody against the whole genome. And by doing that, it's an attenuated or inactivated virus put into your body, and your body responds to the whole genome of that virus. On the other hand, let's say the nasal flu vaccine is a live flu virus, which we don't use in the cancer center because we might shed it and then infect somebody with the flu. But it's supposed to make the immune system respond to antibody that coats our mucous membrane. That's called IgA, whereas in our blood it's called IgG. So the messenger RNA is able to target a section of the virus that actually allows it to attach and get into your cell, whereas the flu virus is the entire virus, and some of it doesn't do anything. Some of the antibodies you make against it has no relevance to preventing infection, but some of it does, and so you're just making an immune response to a larger piece of a virus as opposed to one section of it.
Okay, thank you so much. That was an incredibly detailed explanation of the difference there. We really appreciate that. And so for our listeners out there, you're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. This is your host, Joshua. We got Jamal in the studio. And most importantly, our esteemed guest here today, Dr. John Green, who is the chair of the Infectious Diseases Department at Moffitt Cancer Center, a local gem here. And he is obviously a subject matter expert on COVID-19 and COVID-19 vaccinations. Dr. Green, we have a caller that I want to get to real quick. For our callers, let's keep our conversation strictly on the COVID-19 vaccine and keep the questions short for Dr. Green, who's a fantastic subject matter expert here. So, good morning, caller. What is your name and where are you calling us from?
Yes, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Billy. How you doing?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, I need to ask Dr. Green try to get him real quick on several questions here. One is the testing. And that is that there were studies that were showing very earlier that oral testing and detection of the virus were far more efficient than nasal testing. And that process in terms of detecting this virus, you know, switched more to the oral testing versus the nasal testing. And also wanted to ask him, you know, being a cancer specialist that he is, have they noticed within that realm of
oncology,
neoplasm, any prevalence of certain types of neoplastic diseases that have occurred as a result of this virus? I'm thinking like, for example, you look at a virus like a human papillomavirus, okay? And we know that causes the presence of that virus causes not only cervical cancer, but you see it in oral pharyngeal cancer. So the question is that have you noticed any spinoff with any particular diseases more prevalent with people who are post-COVID or that sort of thing? And one more question is,
well, Billy,
I wanted to ask you, why have they preferred to COVID as an oropharyngeal disease before it manifests itself as a systemic component? And so I'd just like to hear his answer on that one.
Okay? Thank you, Billy.
All right.
So the oral test, which is frequently made by the company Abbott, is very rapid. It gives you the results incredibly quickly. It can almost be a home test. And it's a great test for screening because if it's negative, there's a high chance you don't have the virus. If it's positive, it's probably a high chance you truly do have the virus if we use more sophisticated tests. The problem is that if it's negative, it is detecting, the way that it's detecting the virus is not as efficient as what we do at Moffitt and other hospitals called that nasopharynx swab where they put the swab way down the back of your nose. That one is a special kind of polymerase chain reaction that actually has multiple steps to extract the virus and detect it. And the sensitivity of a test of that nature is incredibly sophisticated to pick up the virus if it's there at all. So the bottom line is, at Moffitt, we don't rely on the oral test. If it is negative, we still will do that PCR test because there will be a lot more cases of people who test negative on the oral test when, in fact, they really have the virus.
That's kind of scary.
Therefore, the PCR nasopharynx is much more sensitive. However, it's a great test because if it's positive, then you're positive. If it's negative, you're not sure. And then your second test is some viruses are oncogenic, which means they can produce cancer, such as the human papillomavirus, which you cited. There's other viruses that are oncogenic, such as hepatitis B can cause liver cancer, hepatitis C can cause liver cancer. not directly, but mainly by causing cirrhosis, fibrosis, and then it produces a cancer. And I can go on and on with other oncogenic viruses. However, there are other viruses that are not, by the way, Epstein-Barr virus, the mononucleosis virus, is very oncogenic. It can produce lymphomas and things like that. So the coronavirus family, just like the influenza and the other viruses, other cold viruses, rhinovirus, those are not oncogenic. There's no evidence in the past nor now that they can make a cancer. So if you get infected with them, there's no evidence that you will get a cancer because of that virus. And it's just the nature of the virus, so that will not happen. And did I miss one of the questions?
Billy, there was one last question?
I didn't know I was still on, but I believe it. Well, I think you... I'm done.
You're done? All right.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much.
I answered all the questions I needed.
All right, thank you, Billy.
Excellent, thank you,
and
Billy.
So we have some more questions here for Dr. Green. Again, you're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. We're coming up at the end of the show, so let's get these questions out real quick for you, Dr. Green. Can the vaccine give you COVID-19?
Great question. So the vaccine cannot give you COVID-19, nor will it make the test to look for COVID-19 positive. So that's good to know. And what you can get, though, just like when you get the flu vaccine, it's going to rev up your immune system 5 to 10 times what it normally is. And when it does that, your body makes all kinds of chemicals and puts the immune system in overdrive. And when that's occurring, your body is going to maybe feel muscle aches, a headache, a fever, a joint ache, and you think, oh no, I have the virus. Now, it won't make you cough and short of breath and all that like a real viral infection will. So you can feel like a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm not taking that flu vaccine anymore because it gave me the flu. Well, really, it didn't give you the flu. It just revved up your immune system, and for a day or so, you felt like you had the flu. So, No, it cannot infect you, but it can rev up your immune system. And some people have a response where they really get revved up, and it makes them even miss a day from work because they're so tired and achy. And other people, it does absolutely nothing for them as far as symptoms, and they feel completely fine. And that we cannot predict because it's based on your own immune response, which is unique.
All right, perfect.
Thank you very much, doctor. A very important question. People called in. They're asking about you can still get the vaccine and you can still get COVID-19. So what about protection levels in this virus?
Right. So if you catch COVID-19 and had no symptoms or had symptoms and were sick from it, your immune system can protect you from catching it again for up to 90 days. And after that, your immune system quickly sort of calms down and may not recognize the virus again within 3 to 6 months. So we think that natural infection is short-lived. And then when they have done studies at how long will this vaccine immunity last, they know for sure it will last 8 months, which is longer than natural infection in general. And some people are claiming it will last a couple of years, which maybe it will, maybe it won't. And we haven't had enough time to tell how long it's going to last because it's so new. But when we look at some of the other bad coronaviruses that were out in China and the Middle East, some of the vaccines they made similar lasted immunity for 2 or 3 years. So we can be optimistic for how long it's going to last, but at least we know it lasts 8 months.
All right.
Whether it lasts a year, 5 years remains to be seen.
Okay. Well, that's Dr. Green. I just want to thank you for being a guest this morning on our show Sunday morning. I know you're an incredibly busy man, so thank you for your time this morning. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you. You take care.
You take care, too. And so that was Dr. John Green, chair of the Infectious Disease Department at Moffitt Cancer Center, a guest on today's The Urban Cafe Show. If you've been listening, thank you so much. Jamal and I say goodbye and go Bucks. We'll get ready for the Sunday Forum with Walter and his crew. They're going to be talking about COVID-19 solutioning.
Oh, yeah. Walter always has an excellent show.
All right. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Welcome back. Yeah, man. How you doing? You good? I know you like that. I know you like that.